Welcome, guys, to the Behind the Shield podcast. My name's James Gearing, and this is episode 197. And this week, I was able to visit TJ Cooper. Now, TJ is not only one of the original CrossFit coaches, the founder of CrossFit East, technically at the time affiliate number two, but also a career veteran now retired from Jacksonville PD, including the SWAT team. So I got to see his program where they use CrossFit to mentor their candidates. They do obviously training for their current members as well, but I got to see the phase three of that training, sit down with TJ, pick his brains, and another great, great interview, another incredibly humble man. So I think you guys are going to get a lot from this because not only was he one of the original members in this CrossFit arena, but also coming from a tactical athlete space, he's had a very unique journey like Greg Amundsen has as well. So as I always say, please go to your podcast app, whichever one you're listening to this on. Subscribe to the show, rate the show, leave feedback if you had feedback for me. I love to hear that. And then most importantly, take these episodes and use your social media for good. You guys are all part of this organic process, this podcast, and help me share these episodes. There are so many people that need to hear so many of these guests. So with that being said, I introduce to you TJ Cooper. Enjoy. So TJ, I want to start by saying thank you for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
So I just got to witness what can only be described as setting the bar high. So we'll jump in about what I just saw. So you had a bunch of law enforcement recruits.
Right.
And I know now I was witnessing the phase three. So I'd love to jump in straight away before we even talk about your backstory and just talk about that. So from zero, from when they walk through the door, how do you introduce them to the movements, and then what's your progression from there?
Okay, so it's what we do is we try to remember that we're bringing in average people to a job that handles extraordinary incidents. They go to a doctor, they do the state 67A form, basically says that they're prepared and we are allowed to administer PT to them. They have no medical conditions that causes any major issues. And that's all good because it's on paper. But what we do when they get here with us is the first thing we do is assess them for 10 days. We do a 3-day makeup on their meals, find out what they're eating, what they're not eating, when they sleep, when they what they consider their most stressful moments during their day. And then basically, we use that model to kind of remind them, you've been doing something for 8 hours a day, and now we're about to add 8 more hours into your day, and you still got to go get that other stuff done. So we're trying to get some discipline and buy-in on what we're about to introduce them to. Once we do that, we do an assessment of what we consider the most, the primary joints and muscles that are going to get injured for work. And we assess that on their first test, you know, weight, food, intake, general condition. So then we introduce phase one. So for us, phase one is a 6-week model, 2 days a week. We don't want to overload them. We do it first thing in the morning because we want to know if there's a medical condition or there's an injury. I want to have the rest of the day to know that it occurred while they're still under my, you know, my chain. So through that phase one, it's essentially body work and cardiovascular conditioning. We do a reverse increase of skills. So we introduce warm up, not stretching. And then we roll into conditioning, which for us in phase one is essentially like a 10 rep, 15 rep, 25 rep, 30 rep, 3 rounds. So that they get to learn about increasing intensity, but you're controlling it so that nobody burns up. You're making them move as a group so that you can ensure that they have full range of motion, no skipping out for the better athletes versus the others gives you a really good snapshot of who you got to work with most. And so we build it into that. We'll run it for 8 weeks. We'll do a benchmark again at the end of 8 weeks to see if they've improved from the first thing we saw. And we start phase two.
Beautiful. And when you said this assessment, are you using the actual movements like squats and overhead work to assess their immobility? Yeah.
So what we do is there's 28, we say 28 skills that, you know, have that push, pull, bend, the nine natural movements we're all supposed to do in rotational. So we take those 28 skills and we find out which ones are being repeated. We try to get it down to 8 movements. So an example would be if somebody says, oh, I have a bad back. And so we have them doing sit-ups and they tank doing sit-ups. But then we always replicate another back movement with another exercise and they don't tank. So now we know maybe they're not being completely honest about that exercise, but they don't, their ego won't allow them to admit, I need to work on this. So yeah, we stay within that window. We introduce those exercises. We make sure the skill movements are solid. And then we introduce a higher plane of movement.
Okay. So and then is that body weight movements of the first phase?
So the first phase is all body weight. No weights, just body weight, and introducing pose, running mechanics, mobility movements, and again, not just standard push-up, pull-up, dip. You know, we'll get upside down, do some handstands, shoulder movements, hollow rocks, total body kind of stuff.
Beautiful. Yeah, because that's the thing, you know, we hear about a PT entrance test, but like my profession as a firefighter, we're told not to run on a fire ground. And so we're moving with a purpose, but we're never really running per se. Complete opposite with law enforcement because, you know, that's you're either running away or running towards. And I don't mean that in a cowardice way. You might have to get away from a hot zone before it's safe.
Move to a better position. Exactly. That's what we say.
Yeah, move and cover. So, but it's interesting you're talking about pose running. So you actually focus on the biomechanics of the run itself.
Yeah, it's a big deal when you consider you have people that move here from Florida or New York or around the world, around the country. In fact, we just in our last class had a lady from Australia.
Oh, really?
And she ended up being a class leader, Muay Thai, ballet, great mover. You know, you would have never expected it, but she could not run. You know, just so. So, yeah, that pose forefoot kind of work is really, really beneficial here, especially if you're running with a gun or you got to chase somebody and keep them in stride with 40 extra pounds of gear on and a gun belt that restricts your hip. It's a good idea to know what your cadence could be and how to move like that. So, yeah, it's helpful.
Brilliant. All right, so then what about phase two?
So phase two, we start introducing weight mechanics, you know, what we would consider primary movers for law enforcement, back squat, deadlift, some front rack position for loads and carries, stuff that in CrossFit you might see as a weight mechanic, but other people might not realize it. And we kind of mix it with some metabolics, so like wall ball. Overhead squat, that sort of stuff. So we introduce those and we move more toward a power and strength base and try to alternate between A and B and slowly start reintegrating their body weight movements with a higher plane. And by that, what I mean is, so they may start out with a regular push-up in phase one. Well, in phase two, it's a push-up with a release. A deck release or a squat might start out as a normal squat, all the mechanics in phase one. In phase two, we start at the bottom. So they got to learn how to stay loaded. Phase one, they would do jumping jacks to kind of get used to that bouncing pose kind of movement. Phase two, we introduce jump rope, singles, doubles, 8 movement skill, and sprints, shuttles, pushes, tire turns, that sort of stuff. They get through that, then we, and that's another 6-week cycle, and then we move to phase three.
Right, which is what I witnessed today.
Yeah.
Okay, so what's phase three overview?
So phase three, we've essentially spent that first cycle in the second phase teaching them how to pay attention and what's important, knowing their body mechanics, why they need to move like they move, and why they need to be prepared to do more. We introduced the concept of training and knowing what you should do most important versus what you want to do. We joke and say it's sort of like bodybuilders do back, by chest, try, and, you know, operators don't specialize. You want to be ready for anything. So we let them create their workouts. We evaluate them, determine what they need to be, and then we essentially try to mix the modalities and increase the intensity, but not injure them by way of it. Keep their ego in check and just drive through.
Yeah. Yeah. And what I love about, you know, what you've described and the way you do it is, and we saw you had a complete spectrum on that field today, from people who are nursing an injury and people who didn't seem to have moved a huge amount in their, you know, up to this point, through to people that were elite athletes, special force soldiers, and everyone in between. So it was really good to hear that you start clean slate from the beginning. If people have already got that movement down, well, great, but you're catching everyone else up. So by the time now you're getting to that intensity which you need, getting them to really dig deep when they're working out, you know, no one's going to hurt themselves because they've already been led through those movements.
Yeah, a really thing that we try to do is, if they hear me call a better athlete out on a movement, or say, I want a little bit more of this, or I need your chest up a little more, or everybody take a look at his form. While some people might think it's, you know, me being the coach or the instructor, but really I'm allowing the opportunity for somebody else to see that same movement and go, chest up. You know, and on the street that translates to watch your back, or I'm on the way, or you have a voice and your voice is protecting them as well as me. So it subliminally works.
Yeah. Yeah. It was great to see. And then that camaraderie too. I mean, that's the thing that, you know, there's a lot of resistance in some areas to this kind of stuff. But the team building that you get from police drill ground, a fire drill ground, you know, military is, you know, it's just, you need that, you know, and to see them cheering each other on. Obviously the elite men today were, you know, finished before some of the other people, and then they went right to the rowers where the other guys were, and they stood there until everyone was done. And that, I don't think there's any better way of fostering that than through exercise.
I agree. It's a big deal with us. We try to remind them that you're going to work with somebody for the next 30 years, and you're not going to like everybody you work with. But having respect and telling a guy what you need and making sure he knows what you're going to do, regardless of the personal opinion, that's super important for what we do. So we allow them some, you know, break apart, you know, who you want to hang out with, but we don't allow you to ignore somebody because you think they're holding the team back, or you got to build that right away. So I try to really push that.
Brilliant. Now, I saw the bell in the combat room.
Right.
What kind of attrition rate do you have going through this?
So we have several programs, you know, basic law enforcement, short term, long term, direct hire, non-certified, certified, corrections. So each program has to be set up for how long they're going to be on the deck. And so attrition-wise, we lose more people from the corrections side of the house because they don't necessarily have an entrance exam. They want the job, but you have to introduce what the job is, which means it's a shorter window for introducing physical training and discipline and rules and regulations. So the attrition's, I don't know the exact number, but it's close to 15%. It's a kind of a large number when you consider it. Now, basic recruits, I've been lucky. I may lose one or two every second or third class. With law enforcement, direct hire, about the same, one or two people. And our injury is like near is zero for me. But we do, again, you got elite athletes and they push and work out on their own on the weekends. And sometimes they'll come in with a tweak. So, but yeah, it's not too bad.
Yeah. Well, it's another interesting observation. I've talked about this a lot with the whole podcast being a double-edged sword. And there's a lot of I talk about with ownership, and that's what, you know, you're enforcing right here as well. But the other side is, you know, create an environment where we can allow these men and women to thrive and be the best, you know, police, fire, whatever they are. And one observation I always say is look at the drill ground of a new hire group, police, fire, you know, military. It's a bunch of really fit men and women. And yeah, there was a spectrum there, but they all crushed that last workout. Yeah. It was awesome to watch.
Yeah.
And then look 10 years down the road at many of these departments. And I try and argue, it's like, you know, there's some people that will kind of shame the fat firefighter, the fat cop. And yeah, there's some that slipped through the cracks that had no intention of doing anything after they got hired. But I think most of them underestimate what the job's going to do to them. And this is, you know, something that we need to change in our profession. But the sleep deprivation and the stress and, you know, sitting in a car if you're law enforcement for hours like we talked about, works against that motivated man or woman that has that mental and physical resiliency that shows up in front of you.
Well, it's interesting because field training, right? New officer gets in a car with an older officer and he teaches them the ropes. And there's that group of field training officers that go, well, you know, in the academy, they just try to get you through the state movements. None of that stuff counts. So I'm going to show you how to really do the job. And we counter that by reminding the guys that are coming out, you're going to be more fit. You're definitely going to be more in tune with the law. And you're definitely more motivated. So if you get in the car and know right away you actually have something to offer him, you could change his perspective of, I go to the Waffle House at 2, I sit here from 4 to 6 because nothing's going on, I go home and I binge watch ESPN Sports Center for 6 hours, I end up staying awake, whereas we've given you the discipline here is show up at 7, so you better be in bed by 11. You know, eat your food now because you're not going to be able to hydrate when you get here. That carries over. And if those guys, if you're comfortable telling them, a senior guy will listen. But if you're not, you'll fall into the millennial trap and, you know, you're not going to get any respect.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you hit an important point as well. You're teaching them nutrition now.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the thing I think that a lot of academies miss is what a great opportunity to discuss what you're eating.
Yes. Toughest is hands down the toughest thing that you'll have. You know, it's there's just too many good restaurants out there in a car for 12 hours a day that'll give you a police discount. So, you know, you're going to eat Chick-fil-A and whatever else, you know, it may be the better of the fast food, but it's still not going to be as good as you know what you should have and prepping your own stuff and just having the discipline to do it. Our nutrition deal is a big deal, you know, and, you know, there's 1,000 diet books out there because nobody's found one that works for everybody.
Because they don't.
Yeah.
Because we're all different.
Yeah, we're all different. So we try to have them respect that, start out with making better choices, drill that down to eating portions of the better choices, drill that down to performance, not go muscles versus show muscles, you know, and that's a big deal too. So
yeah. And the other area I think that people are starting to do now, which I think is great, but when people are entering the job, that's when you talk to them about mental health too, about what you're going to deal with. Again, the sleep deprivation carries in there, but you're going to see some horrible things, and the rub some dirt in it is not the way to deal with that.
That's interesting too, because 8 years ago, we had a big push toward getting military people. You know, we want those guys are combat proven. They've been out there. They've done some tours. They know what discipline's like, and they, you know, we want them versus a guy that, you know, worked in corporate, and then he comes here because, you know, all his life he wanted to be the police, but really he decided when he saw the application saying, go be the police. It's a job. And it, what we found out, however, is that a portion of those military guys that came in, you know, had significant mental stressors that they had to learn to control. And now we've accepted them. And, you know, some of them were overly aggressive. Some of them were, you know, like PTSD, just so you don't know. You can't angle toward one or the other. You got to be prepared to teach each one of them. Here's stuff you're going to witness that's going to really affect you. And we know you've done that over there, but we got to kind of get you to keep that in check.
Mm-hmm. And it's different. I mean, I've had a lot of military on the show, and there's a different mindset because over there, you know, you've got two forces that are opposing each other, both with, you know, the mindset that they're going to go and kill the other one. For you and I, we respond to people who harm's been done to them a lot of times unsolicited. So it's a totally different animal as well when you come from the military into first responders.
Or they don't know and they harm themselves, and you still got to render the same amount of protection to them. Help them out as much as you can, get the right resources. And, you know, firing police now is so much different. You know, my 35 years, I can honestly say initially we weren't that much in the direction of caregiving. Resource work, getting somebody, other than domestic violence has always been a big, big deal. But mental health, it was take them over to the mental health center. You know, oh, here he is again. Now, you know, you're doing critical incident stress training. You're learning they're requiring officers to go through stress management courses. It's sort of like the heart attack deal now. You know, there's a reason you're having a heart attack, and probably stress and lack of sleep and poor food and just burning a candle at both ends. And you and I both, you know, talked earlier, we've both been there and we've done it to ourselves, and but we got a chance to fix it, and we fixed it, and now let's get it out there, let everybody else know this is what we want to do.
Absolutely. Well, you said 35 years ago, so I'd love to just explore a little bit about your earlier life. So going even before that, were you born in Florida originally?
Yes. So I am born in Jacksonville, went to Raines High School, had a soccer and wrestling background in school, got a scholarship to Virginia, or Hampton Institute in Virginia, came home from that, started doing martial arts, probably later than most people. You know, we all kicked and punched as kids, but I ran into some really good Japanese instructors, and so started martial arts late 70s. And probably I was actually in school to be an engineer. And my mom was a nurse who died at 42. Oh, God. Yeah. So that whole diabetes and, you know, just kind of didn't register, you know, and it was right there.
Did she work nights?
Yes.
Yeah. See, and the reason I'm flogging a dead horse at every single interview I mentioned, but these are all very, very important factors.
Yeah, midnight shift at University Hospital and in the ER, and it was just, you know, stressing like a sleep and coming home with, you know, two Hardee's sausage biscuits, stuff that in, go to sleep, take her insulin, go back to work, and, you know. So, it was rough, but... So I actually transferred my degree from engineering to medicine, went in for to be a registered nurse, and then realized that I fell in love and needed to get a job, and police work came along, and yeah, so this one stuck. So 86, I started doing police work for the sheriff's office, Jacksonville Sheriff's Office. Left there in November 2016 and got hired on at University of North Florida. So I can tell you just the mechanics of learning what I've learned. I believe I right at the ship at the right time, I'm sure I would have been like the majority of other law enforcement senior guys that brought me on. Dale Lowe, guys died of heart attack. John Butler died of a heart attack. Ronnie Dickens, a motor man, you know, died of a heart attack. It's and all like right within their first year of retirement. So I've always been into fitness, always kind of enjoyed it. But probably 20, 25 years ago, it kind of dawned on me that I think I just like service. And if you're going to provide service, then you got to try to be informed and kind of walk it a little bit like you're going to talk it. And so, yeah, so just kind of halfway through my police career, I ran into Greg Glassman and, you know, started doing CrossFit. And
how did you run into him? Because that's quite I mean, I'm sure at that point you just met another dude, but you had no idea the magnitude of this meeting.
Yeah, I tell you, I was really lucky. I've always, you know, been, you know, blessed is the word we throw out with the number of really quality people that I've just somehow showed up on their doorstep and they took me in and I just got what I could get from them. But so in 2000, we had National Police Corps was a program here at this academy. It was the first one in the country. And one of the grant requirements was that we had to introduce a system of training that wasn't standard. So a buddy of mine, Derek Ray, had a brother in California. And he says, yeah, I work out with this guy at Gold's Gym. You got to meet him. So Derek called his brother. His brother gives him Derek's or Coach Glassman's number. We call him, conference call him from our office and go, hey, this is so-and-so from Jacksonville, Florida. We've been hearing about these workouts you do. We want to try them. And the story goes, he told Lauren that he thought we were weird because we were like calling, wanting to know about something we've never seen. So, yeah, he basically offline sent us workouts for a year. We tested them. We had I was in college for organizational management. So we took the police corps group and did CrossFit. And then we took the law enforcement group and did regular PT, basically do what you do, do what you've always done. And we're going to do this. They were doing it 5 days a week. We decided to do it 2 days a week. We tracked all of it, documented it. And then we had a little, what we call a mash, where we brought both groups together and kind of did some baseline testing. And the numbers were like no fooling, 3-1. Like we were sold. So we called him and told him that we wanted him to come to Florida and give a talk to the police corps people and see what was what. And he says, well, I don't do that. I just teach people. And so Bill Walensky from police corps says, we'll give you $10,000. And he said, oh, well, I do seminars.
I do it as of about 2 minutes ago.
Yeah. So while that was in the works, he showed up in Jacksonville in room 216 down the hall. And I guess on really all accounts, that was the first seminar ever. And so then we got him on the circuit. And it's funny because I still have the paperwork where he sent me. He says, what do you think about this? And what do you think about these prices for that? Because I just want to help these guys. And, you know, it was very grassroots. And I know it's hard for people to see that concept now because it's a multi-million dollar group. But he's always been in the corner of fitness and health and wellness. So from there, he started flying me up to California. I was on the first, the foundational CrossFit seminar group when Rob Wolf and Mark Ripetoe, Bergner and Martone, when the coach used to actually still do all the seminars before Nicole Carroll and Pat Sherwood and So then the affiliate thing happened and I said, I want to open an affiliate. And he says, what do you want to do? me being a martial artist, I said, well, I want to call it CrossFit East. And I've got this Japanese guy who's a warrior, and, you know, so it'll be CrossFit and it'll be East martial arts stuff. And he said, sure, you're on the East Coast, so that works for me. So,
and you were the first affiliate on the whole of the East Coast of the U.S.
Yeah, I got lucky. Florida, this side of the world. And Nick Nimbler and Dave Werner, two SEALs up in Seattle, called and said, hey, we want to do this affiliate thing. I'll give you $500. So he says, sure. You know, so they started north. We started east. HQ, we didn't count at the time. But now that we count them, so we were 2 and 3.
Right.
13,000 affiliates later. Now, you know, we're still around.
It's amazing. Because I found it through a friend of mine who's a fireman when I worked in California. The CrossFit, I think it's called CrossFit Harbor. It was in Huntington Beach in California. Yeah. So I think they were kind of early-ish as well.
Yeah.
And I never forget when he showed me, and I've been an athlete my whole life, martial arts my whole life. And I was like, I don't know what this is. That was horrible.
Yeah.
And I love it.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
And I was hooked. So what was the first workout you did? Do you remember?
Cindy? Yeah. Let me take that back. The first workout we did didn't have a name. And it was a 400-meter run with 12 deadlifts and 15 kettlebell swings, 5 rounds. And he did that here. He walked in to our gym, and we literally had like 3 barbells, 400 pounds of weights, and some dumbbells. And he made the workout up on the fly, took us out there and said, here's what we're doing, and nobody finished it. And it was like 3 rounds, run a lap and lift this bar 12 times and throw some kettlebells we held by the heads, because we didn't have kettlebells, we had dumbbells.
Yeah,
nobody finished it. Nobody. And she said, yeah, this is CrossFit. So flew out to California. My first workout was against Greg Amundsen. It was Cindy, you know, 5, 10, 15 pull-ups, push-ups, and squats. And I beat him. You know, it was every minute on a minute for 30 minutes. I'm not sure if that's Cindy or I think that's Cindy.
Yeah, I have to admit, the names, the girls' names, I'm terrible at
remembering. It was every minute on the minute for 30 minutes. You just had to repeat that cycle.
Right.
And, you know, first time out to California, you know, the weather's, you know, nice. And I beat their big guy.
The fire breather.
Yeah. And then I find out that I'm doing 5, 10, 15, and he's doing +3 of every of the elements that I'm doing in that same minute on the minute.
Mm-hmm.
And I say I beat him because, you know, we did the last round at 30 minutes, and I got my chin over the bar before he got his chin over the bar. But now, you know, now that I know the real story, I thought it was gracious of them not to tell me, you know, until afterward. But, yeah, it's something about keeping your ego in check and still driving, doing that best effort thing.
Yeah, which is that is a great point as well. What I found, and we talked about this as well, with the competitive element, when I first got into it, it was so cool. It was about 2007, doing it off the main site. And there's me, you know, 168 pounds, 6 feet in America. And then there's Bjorn in Sweden who posts his. And I'm like, well, Bjorn and I are about the same age, same height. So that's a good comparison.
That's very cool. Yeah.
But then the whiteboard, it seemed like it shifted from a motivational tool to now people are skipping reps, shitty form. So it's a shame, because we used it for a lot in our gym, and then we ended up getting rid of it. As far as, I mean, we have it, but as far as really, like when someone says at a certain class, oh, so-and-so did it in this time, right. Like, yeah, but they didn't actually do it. Their form is horrible. So
our take on it is, we use the whiteboard, and here's what we tell them. You don't have to be first, but the guy that's in first has to turn around and hear you coming. And if you put your name on the board in front of him, he has to high five somebody and say, nice job, you got me on that one, versus going to the locker room and going, well, of course he did it in 2 minutes. His crap, his form was crap, and he was crap. And so you got to decide how you create a culture on the board. And if you're just putting numbers up and not verifying the numbers, it is a huge detriment. Get rid of it. Don't do it. If you use it from the standpoint of, okay, me and you are going to do this and we're going to have a judge. And now you know what my movement is and I know what your movement is. If you're really true to yourself, okay, nice job.
Yeah.
I'll get you next time.
Exactly.
So we try to do that. We try to do that.
Yeah.
Sometimes it doesn't work, obviously. So, and sometimes you'll get the reverse where the ladies always feel like, oh, you scaled it for me or my time was faster, but I only lifted this. And, you know, one side of the coin, we're saying that Fran being a workout that has weights for the big guy and pull-ups for the little guy. And so since you're doing one thing that you like and one thing that you like, in theory, the best athlete should win. We tell the ladies that too. You know, I'm a wrestler. I'm all in on weight classes, but you know, we go with ages and spectrums of wellness, and you just have to kind of find a science that works for you and believe in it. Yeah. Push it out.
Yeah. I have one thing I tell, because I get that too. You know, you get some newer people that are heavy or whatever. And yeah. I'm like, I'm going to ask you to do one thing. Look at my face. Okay. Look at your face. Do those two faces match? Yeah, we both. That was horrible. Doesn't matter if you had an empty bar or 500 pounds.
Right.
If you had the same kind of intensity or resistance or, you know, experience, then the other stuff is fluff. I mean, there's women that outlift me in my gym. There's men outlift me in my gym.
Yeah.
You know, we all have our strengths and weaknesses. So you can't compare, you know, apples to oranges. You got to be better than you who you were, you know, a week ago.
What's important about that too is, so you look at the 1% athletes, you know, their term for the guys that go to the games. And if you really don't know what your capacity is, then you default to saying, well, they're on steroids or all they do is work out all day. And, you know, we're no wonder they can do that. But if they were just doing average stuff like me, then, and that's a disservice to yourself. You know, if they're eating right, if they're getting sleep and they're doing recovery stuff and they're working out with good programming with a good instructor, then you should have the same kind of quality of movement. Now, all things being relative, you know, I'm 59, so sure, I'm not going to beat Froning on my best day, right? But we both get to recover. We both know what we need to do next, and we both know what our skills and work should be. As long as you don't turn it into, I need to be first, and as long as nobody knows, I'll shave a few reps off here and that sort of stuff, and it's no good.
Yeah,
so... But recovery stuff's a big deal. Back in the day, Coach Glassman said, the only thing you need to do to recover is nothing. You know, you don't need to do mobility. You don't need to sleep more. You know, Olympic athletes don't do A, B, and C. And, of course, you can see where the kind of the reality is now. And I think what he was saying was, don't be afraid of being intense. And he downplayed the whole mobility and rest and recovery because, you know, he's trying to convince you that you want to try this new crazy thing that doesn't look like we give you any rest and recovery. But in the big shape, every 3 days you're recovering. And he was pretty adamant about do nothing on your 3 days of recovery. You know, walk, take your dog out, you know, go get on a bike and ride, recover.
Active recovery.
Yeah, and then come back and do hard work again. So, yeah, I get it. I think old school, if you want to use that term, CrossFit versus Reebok, new school CrossFit. You know, these are terms that, you know, people come to me with all the time. And there is a difference, but the theme is the same. We're just trying to get people better.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that was one good thing about getting into it early is I have a different perspective because I got into it before. I mean, the games happened like right when I first started, but they weren't on TV. Right. So you saw the purer one. You saw the, you know, 4 day cycle. You saw the videos of those best athletes doing great movement.
Spieler and those guys. Yeah. Just
pre butterfly pull ups and
yeah. Stuff.
So what has been your observation like years before I, you know, was exposed to it, just of the evolution and how the games have factored in the positive side and the negative side?
Yeah, I'd say the biggest change that I see is that it really was for public service. You know, he was very much about the military, police and fire, and guys that were willing to go into the unknown and unknowable and just drive hard. Now, he always had that underlying theme of there's no difference between what, you know, your grandma and you, that verbiage. But it was pretty fringe, it's your obligation to come back to your family. And it's my obligation to get you ready to come back. And he said something that I think was Patton, you know, men will die for points. He kind of switched that around and kind of used that theme in theory for like, well, let's see who the best athletes are. Let's use these workouts, because if you got the engine going and we put it on a time and weight on a clock, these are quantifiable things and let's use them. So the games were really just a way for him to collect empirical data. And somehow that kind of evolved or devolved, depending on your take, into which company has the best gear, Lululemon or Reebok. You know, who makes the best weights, Rogue or Bigger, Faster, Stronger. And the marketing thing wasn't his big push. But if you have something that you want people to see and you really believe in it, you either have to create the avenue, the venue, the income to do it, or it probably ain't going to get done. So I'd say the advantage to the games is that it exposed CrossFit, warts and all, to everybody. The disadvantage is that it exposed CrossFit, warts and all, to everybody. So you got to kind of be a big boy and make your own decisions. Is Orange Theory your thing? Is, you know, Fast Five Fitness your thing? Is Anytime Fitness your, is CrossFit your thing? Bodybuilding? You got to find a path, and you got to like do the hard thing and really research and find out if it's the right thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I never forget. I think I've told this on this podcast before, but when I was on the main site, I was at the YMCA and they actually had, you know, decent stuff. They had some boxes and some war balls and things, but it wasn't set up for CrossFit at all. But I would kind of just, you know, modify like we all do back then.
Make it work. Yeah.
But I'll never forget doing like handstand pushups and, I think it was, you know, like stuff on the rings as well. And I had the, you know, the high school kids in there with their cut off shirts doing their bodybuilding, and, you know, sneering at me when I was doing it.
Yeah. Don't drop the weight.
Yeah. You know, when it wasn't even that so much, just like, what the hell is he doing? You know, upside down with his feet against the wall. But then fast forward 2 or 3 years, the games came out. Same kids. Hey, bro, can you show me how to do that muscle up? Exactly. I'm like, nothing has changed. Nothing apart from it went on TV. So now something that you thought was silly, someone else told you, hey, this is actually cool.
Yeah.
And now, you know, the perception changed.
I think he had it on the head, you know, cultural perception stuff. We teach a course here, a human diversity course, right? And when I teach it, I'll bring in a song. You know, I'll play a country song, and then I'll play a rap song, and then I'll play a rock song. And I'll just say, okay, just want to poll the class. Who's in the rap? Who's in the rock? Who's in the country? You know, and then, okay, why don't you like rap? You know, because the lyrics are always crass and rude and whatever. And why don't you like country? Because country is always sad and, you know, depressing. And why do you like rock? Because, you know, it pumps me up for working out. And then I put the lyrics on the board, and it's the same song, country, rock, and rap.
It's oh, really? Like,
so if the message is the same, it's how you're receiving it. You can't just decide what you don't like. You got to experience it. And sometimes you got to be forced to experience it. But then you ultimately, at the end of the day, nobody can make you Catholic if you're Baptist, you know, or, you know, apostolic if you're agnostic. You got to decide. But when you shut yourself down on what might work, like we were talking about with pain recovery and such, then you're the guy that's still in pain. You need to find out, do your research, go to the people that know the answers. And
yeah, and I think that's something that we saw, and it was founded on truth. I think, you know, I'm sure you saw as well, there were movements that we were doing in CrossFit, especially people that were doing a lot of the training, that were creating imbalances. The kipping was you know, not strengthening the back, the supinated grip over and over and over again. I'm sorry, the pronated grip. So then you have people like Julien Pinot and some of these other guys that come in, you know, Kelly Starrett, that just pointing that out. Like, it's a great system. However, throw some strongman stuff in, do some open hand carries, you know?
Rotational movement stuff. Yeah, all of that stuff, just like, it's kind of key. I mean, I have not seen it in print, and I don't want to promote rumor, but I heard that Coach Glassman said if he had some things to do again, he would have introduced a kipping pull-up much later. And that was the thing that made CrossFit CrossFit. But he's, you know, said he would have introduced it later. That's one, kudos for him if he said it, because he's not like stuck on my path is the only path and it never changes. And the other side, you know, is like you're opening the door for people to say, see, I told you. You got to be confident and comfortable in your direction to do something like that. So, yeah, I think it's a great model. You know, my first fitness certification was a ISSA, International Sports Science Association. And then I went through the Cooper Institute, and I went to a FLETC and did their ASVAB, like for law enforcement fitness, just like a month long. And NSCA,
TSAC,
yeah. All of that, you know, then Olympic lifting, and CrossFit has it, you know, or a good fitness program should have it. And you kind of see the trend now where people accept that. And we joke and say, well, if it looks like CrossFit, it is CrossFit, you know. But I would say that, like, the coach was never into the certifications. But if somebody's going to put you out of business unless you create certifications, you got a choice to make. So while, again, the pros and cons of old CrossFit versus new CrossFit, we had an in-house certification. You know, level one was 3 days. A level two was three days. A level three was, I think you know what you're doing, and you run an affiliate and we like you, so you're a level three. And then it changed to, you know, the, okay, we're actually recording this and we're evaluating it and we have these people. And then it turned into, okay, the state says we have to give you an exam for it to be this. And look, my dad used to say, a guy that's going to do a job well doesn't have to have a college degree. He just has to be willing to get up at 6 a.m. and do his job and keep going to do his job. And then he would turn around and look at me and smile and says, but you're going to college. So, you know, if my dad, who didn't go to college, you know, military and forklift driver and all of that, realized the importance of common sense and the importance of enhanced and advanced sense, I'm going to do everything I can, get whatever I can get, and just kind of keep pushing it out. So CrossFit has that unfortunate deal. You know, you spent $3,000 for an affiliate. Well, wow, they're ripping me off. Really? I mean, Orange Theory is $150,000 to be a franchise.
Really?
Here's a guy that's saying, give me $3,000. I won't interfere with you much. I got some policies you got to follow, and I don't want any more of your money. How is he ripping you off, or he's supporting you and he's not taking your money?
Mm-hmm. And the big thing about them is they're part of the solution. The mud runs are part of the solution. The color runs, they're, you know, all these things that are getting people out there, expose them to the fitness side, the people that are doing good things on the nutrition side. Right. You know, people, I mean, look at the pills. They'll take hundreds of thousands of dollars of your money. No one, you know, bats an eye. Yeah. But someone says, hey, our monthly membership is $120, and they lose their mind. They're like, well, how much is your prescription every month? How much is your cell phone?
Your $4 coffee every day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's an investment back into the community. And Iron Legion, where I coach, they're right in the heart of downtown Ocala, and we do, you know, charity stuff. And you know, it's not to be seen doing charity stuff. It's because they actually care, and they have members from kids all the way through to pensioners.
Huge. You say that, and that I should, that should have been the first thing on my head when you asked me about the differences between old school and new school. We were like really about the charities. You know, there was some fundraiser, whether it was local or something, we were at the front of that, you know. And I sort of understand why it's not that way now. People are trying to make their, you know, their income on a gym. So you can't like donate as much, or you can't do A and B. I get it. You know, you can't close your gym on a Saturday so that the community can show up, because somebody in your group's going to say, hey, I'm paying you $160 a month, and we're having a seminar this weekend. How does that benefit me? You got to see the big picture. Of course it benefits you.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I got to say, I think our community is pretty good. There's none of that, because there will be a workout. It's just we're doing it for this cause. I mean, the number of times I've done hero workouts, some, you know, that we have that are already written, some for firemen that we've lost or local law enforcement, yeah. And we'll write one and say, this is today's workout, and they all show up in droves. It's amazing.
It's a good community deal, you know, and you get to really experience something, get lost in the crowd. Nobody's looking at you like, wow, that guy sucks. You know, you're there for a reason. So, yeah, it's positive. That's what you want.
All right, well, I'm going to shift focus back to your specific program again, because we didn't get to finish this conversation. But so you've got this great program, this great on-ramp of physical fitness and wellness for these recruits. And we see that a lot in other departments too. But that where we hit a wall, and the perfect analogy is in the fire service, we call our training minimum standards. So it's in the damn title, like, hey, you just we're given the key to the lock to this career. But then when we get hired, a lot of times there's resistance to any sort of annual standards after that. And as you and I know, I mean, you know, physical fitness, I think the fire service more than PD, because I mean, the stuff we wear, the stuff we carry, our air is literally on our back.
And the work frequency too.
Yeah. You know,
that 24 on off thing. Ugh.
Exactly. So all those combined, you know, you, I mean, you're, like you said, 59, which is incredible, because you look like you're freaking 42. But, you know, I just turned 45. I would be disgraced, you know, disgusted if someone said to me, oh, James, we're going to scale down the requirements because of your age. And we had the discussion about race too earlier, you know,
right.
It's a disservice whether you're black, female, 55, whatever. Right. If I'm going to put on the uniform, be on the streets or on a fire engine, then, you know, why would I say, oh, I know ladders are 150 pounds, but I just only want to be at 100 pounds. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So what, that's a very long-winded question, but what is your philosophy on the annual fitness standards?
So if you're going to have the opportunity to have insurance, a heart bill, a standard where your rate of pay is tied into your like performance, and you can be dismissed from your job for lack of performance, unless somebody's holding some sort of standard that suggests that you might need to be doing this, you're setting yourself up for a failure. And I know that's tricky, because if you've got a police officer that's been around 20 years and all of a sudden we say, we're going to have a yearly requirement. Well, grandfathering in, you've done your job task analysis stuff. You know what's required. You have to have a decision, a standard. And honestly, if my opinion is, if you have it at work, then it'll probably follow you home. You know, you'll walk the dog more. You'll work out a little more. You might pay more attention to what you eat. Not like I'm off the clock. You're not off the clock. You're not off the clock for 40 years. You know, not like, oh, I'm off. You're literally in a battle until somebody says you don't have to do it anymore. And that's probably, like we talked about earlier, that's probably when the real battle starts. Because now what? I'm not required to do this. The discipline piece. I think it's important. I think you you have to have a standard that's above minimum, but achievable. Yeah. Sort of like a proficiency exam for firearms. If I say, if you're going to carry a gun off duty, you have to show me that you know how to use it. But my proficiency exam is point the gun over there and pull the trigger 10 times. That's not really a proficiency exam. It's sort of like, okay, it's functional.
You can do it.
Yeah, you can do it. But how do I know you can unload it? How do I know if it jams, it does this? How do I know you can get it out of your wherever you had it? That's proficiency. And I think that's a responsibility of having a job. Yeah. So I think it's important.
Okay. Yeah. Cause I mean, that's the thing with us is you have a standard. You have a standard. A ladder weighs a certain amount. A hose weighs a certain amount. You can just average an American, make a dummy that weight. Yeah. And then you're not being prejudiced on age, sex, race, whatever. You know, so that's when people like they overthink it, like, oh, we're going to do deadlifts. What weight should we like? Don't just set up a course, kind of like the CPAD that we have. Yeah. That's already there for you, or a version of that mimics the exact job. So like you said, it's right. Keeping the standard, but it's not unfair. You're not expecting, right. You know, someone to deadlift 600 pounds.
Isn't that interesting? Because when you think about a person that, again, just a quick second back to CrossFit, if you think about a person that looks at a workout on the website and it says you got to lift 225 and then you got to do 30 of those. And the guy maybe can lift it one time. Well, you've lost the purpose of the workout and you set yourself up to be hurt. We're kind of the same way. If you have a standard, sure, you got to introduce some stuff to work toward the standard. But then you got to accept that it's the standard. And honestly, it'll let you know when it's time to retire, you know, and you can't maintain that line anymore. You know, it's time to go away. And if that line's too high, you're going to lose people sooner than you should because they don't want to do it anymore. Sort of like the pretend quota thing, right? If you tell me I have to go out and write 20 tickets a day, there's just going to be a line where I'm just going to go, nah, this is nuts. I'm not doing this. You know, so I think the standards are critical. They have to be. But again, with what you were talking to me about earlier offline was food and recovery and sleep. You should have some standards for that. You know, you can't go, well, I'm going to work two off-duty jobs today and then I got the academy for 6 hours tomorrow. Then I got to take the dog to the vet, and it's just going to be a long day. Because our job, we don't know when the long day is coming. But if you know the standard, if you know I got to get this in, you'll mold around it. You won't overload. But it's a tough thing to teach, the discipline of doing that. But you're doing it. You're getting the market out there. You're not like preaching it from a one corner. You know, you got a range of people. And if this information is starting to come together through a range of people doing a range of different things, then it seems to me like the common theme or standard is right there. And you need to pay attention. You need to start doing it. So I hope I'm hoping that we'll take more advantage of, you know, this new relationship with our group here. And I mean, I've been here 17 years and I've seen a lot of stuff, but from the health and wellness part, which is maybe why I'm such a staunch CrossFit guy, there's not a lot out, you know, there's a lot out there, but we don't know how to find it and funnel it. And so this is a resource, you know, you talk about Steret and the foundation program. I've never heard of it. Going to find out about it. Medicines that half the world thinks are bad and the other world needs to find out because it works. You can't be in pain if you have a method to not be in pain, you know, or not get sleep because you're in so much pain you can't sleep. And yeah, for the sake of your ego or public perception.
No, and you're absolutely right. So it's been almost 200 episodes now, a huge diverse spectrum But again, those common denominators that keep showing up are, you know, the high intensity training type work with strongman stuff works very well for our community. But if we're not getting the rest and recovery, which we definitely need to look at our shifts and every single sleep person when we tell them the shifts that both of us do, are like, well, yeah, that's absolutely killing you. There's not one person said, James, you're so full of crap. Yeah. No, you don't need sleep. You know, look at vampires. They're great. They love they love being up all night.
Like you were saying earlier, even like the you know, special operations community realized the value of a 20-minute nap. Yes. You know, on a field with the world caving in around you and figuring out a way to go dark for 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. And now you're ready to go up and go again until you get real. Clearly there's some value. You know, stuff that we need to research and be better at and stop looking for all of the fads and find the things that.
Yeah. You don't need to reinvent the wheel. Exactly. All right. I want to touch on one quick point before we just do some wrap up questions, but you've been a martial artist your whole life. So the one thing I love discussing, because I have as well, is what kind of combatives do you teach here now to the new police officers?
So it's interesting because traditional martial arts, you know, Shotokan, Yoshinkan, Aikido, and you know, Shinkage-ryu stuff, it's just a movement pattern to make you better because you never get really good, right? So when I started police work, I met a guy, Bruce Siddle and Mike Kirby from a PPCT, this chaology group now with Colonel Grossman and all. And he actually had a system for police, and that was what I came up on. If I were to pick a martial arts, I think Kali is a great kind of a police segue defensive art kind of deal. Krav Maga is really, really good. There's a lot of talk about jiu-jitsu, but there's so many families of it now. You know, Brazilian jiu-jitsu, mixed martial arts, no holds barred. So I think if I were picking a traditional martial art, probably Arnis or Kali, Krav Maga, a Japanese martial art, as much as I'm a Shotokan guy, they consider that pretty, you know,
it's a hard style, huh?
Yeah.
So I did that. That was one of my first ones I ever did.
Kyoshinkai, those kind of deals, Ishinryu, Shorinryu kind of systems. But there's Frank Cucci, who was a SEAL way back, has a nice police system. And I have to say, I think the CQB system for SEAL is pretty solid. So the thing for me, though, is kind of like what we do with fitness. Everything is based on 7 or 8 movements. And you just grow them out. So the more time you spend on the 7 or 8 movements, the better opportunity you have for the other movements to come in. So I'm more of a traditionalist. I always tell people it doesn't take much to get sucker punched or be in a fight and watch your heart rate kind of go through the roof and survive the initial onslaught. So anything that strengthens your mind and like prepares you probably is not a bad system.
Yeah, actually I've got George Ryan coming on. I think this should be this weekend. So yeah, another guy.
Yeah, he was actually one of the first guys that came down with the hostage rescue stuff from LAPD.
Oh really?
And I met him, and he was a taekwondo boxer kind of guy, and I gave him one of my old books from one of my Korean instructors. I was doing this thing called Hanpool, which is just some off the chart thing, and I told him about CrossFit, and he's like, yeah, okay, thanks,
and dismissed it.
Yeah, 8 or 9 years later, George Ryan's doing CrossFit boxing and CrossFit striking, and yeah, we go way back. He's a great guy.
Yeah,
he's a great guy.
I'm looking forward to getting him on too. He's got an interesting story. And just, again, like so many people like you, like just all these great people, there's so much humility. And we're surrounded by these singers and rappers and actors that are just obnoxious. And there's some great ones I had on the show. But the true great people don't stand on top of a building with a loudspeaker shouting about how amazing they are.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Service, man. Mm-hmm. It's about the service. Just do what you can when you can, and the rest will happen.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it'll be fine.
All right, well, let me ask some wrap-up questions so I can free you up so you can go buy food for your dog.
Yeah. Yeah.
First one I always ask, is there a book that you love to recommend to people? It can be about what we've discussed or something completely different.
I read a lot, sometimes two or three books at a time. And so Drawing on the Right Side of the Brain is a book that I really like. One of the things that the Japanese martial arts used to tell us is that it's really important that you do something outside of your normal realm. And so when I was in Nova Scotia with my Aikido instructor, his wife brought me a sketch pad and it made me draw 30 minutes a day for 10 days. By the time I got home, I could that actually looks like an apple. And so she recommended this book, Drawing on the Right Side of the Brain. Lights Out, Sleep, Sugar, and Survival by T.S. Willey, W-I-L-E-Y. Great book on what we talked about with recovery and why it's important to get sleep and real sleep, not like TV playing in the background sleep, real sleep. Life and Work, this guy named Dalio, D-A-L-I-O. Just kind of got turned on to him through a guy over at CrossFit Rife. It's a thick book, but it's just kind of like the inner workings of life and stuff like that in general. When Violence is the Answer is another one that I really, really like. Kevin DeBecker's book on how fear affects you, stress, neural overload, why you got to be prepared for A, B, or C. He's got three books out that are just great for our professions or just people that are going to run into stress overload stuff. And so when I was in college, I put myself through college working as a short order cook for Denny Moran. And so I like America's Test Kitchen and Cooks Illustrated. And, you know, they're not really books per se, but the complexity of learning how to cook a meal and what's important about it, just it eventually takes you down another road, right? You know, what's the best butter? Why is that the best butter? Is ghee really good? You know, olive oil. What about canola? You think you're just learning to cook, but you kind of get interested in why the food tastes like it tastes or why you can survive with. We tell the recruits a story about, okay, would you rather go to Woody's Barbecue and get the three meat salad or Publix and get half a chicken, a bowl of fruit, and a salad? Well, of course, everybody would rather go to Woody's. But for that same $7, you can feed yourself three times and nutritionally correct. So it's sort of the same way with opening the door for reading and stuff is just a big deal. And being diverse enough to I don't do a lot of biographies. I mean, fiction stuff. But yeah, I like reading.
Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting you say about the cooking stuff, because that's something I think that our generation is having to realize now is the reality is if I want to take control of my house and I can't cook, then I need to learn how to cook.
You need to learn.
It's the only way to be healthy, unless I'm going to pay through the yin-yang for prep meals the rest of my life.
You're never going to escape corn and sugar and this and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So at least minimize it by knowing what you're going to go get.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So what about the same question, a movie and or documentary?
The Princess Bride is just a Christmas story. There's just something about those movies. They're long enough but short enough to get the whole purpose and point of life across, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Action-wise, I like John Wick, the first one, The Equalizer. The second one is growing on me now. Documentaries. I think it's called Go, like the Japanese board game Go. Mm-hmm. So there's a documentary on Netflix called Go. Okay. And it's basically like the top Go player in the world versus a computer, kind of like the chess thing years ago.
Yeah, someone told me about the chess documentary. It was the same.
And so, of course, the computer, the guy wins one. And just the way it grew into it was just a great movie. Anthony Bourdain, I like all of his stuff. Animal or was it Wild Planet or Earth?
Planet Earth.
That entire series is really, really, really good. Yeah, there's a ton of good stuff out there.
Brilliant. Well, that's plenty, so thank you. The next question, is there a person that you would recommend to come on this podcast as a guest to talk to the first responders and military of the world?
Yeah, I mean, I like George Ryan, you've mentioned. Mike Pelagiello, who's from a military perspective, he's really knowledgeable about the whole deployed, not deployed, and stress and people coming back and recovering. Of course, Kelly Sterrett would be great. Jeff Alexander from a movement, mobility, recovery kind of standpoint. Gosh, your guy that you mentioned from Huntington Beach, I thought he was a lawyer. He's a fireman?
No, not the owner. There's a fireman that trained
okay.
there.
Yeah. Okay. He's a state attorney or something down there, but he has a lot of good stories about stuff that families have had to deal with while, you know, and then his investigators, you have to embrace that, and the family's coming back to them wanting to know what you're doing next. And I can't think of his name right now. Rob Wolf, obviously, he'd be a great choice.
Yeah, he was actually in EMT for a while too.
Yeah, and biophysicist, and yeah, me and him go way back. He's a great guy.
Yeah, I reached out to him. I think it was only on social media, and he said, yeah, he will. But I mean, I know how busy he is. He's got his own podcast and he does other people's, but one day we'll get him on here.
Yeah. Now, if you want somebody that's controversial, I mean, like, you know, Mark Ripito is just, he's very opinionated about strength and power and why you need to just be strong. But,
yeah, I reached out to him. I spoke to him. He's like, have you read my book? And I'm not a book reader. Yeah. I listen to interviews. I've studied his work. I was like, not yet. He goes, all right, well, then just call me back when you have.
Yeah, that's
so smart. I'm still going to, but
well, I'll tell you, it's then, a textbook. His, you know, partner, I mean? Lon Kilgore, talk to him. He's really, really versed in this entire, he's like, as much as you are, really immersed in this, the whole wellness and certification and why you do stuff and anatomy. And, you know, he's huge for it. So,
yeah, I had Jim Wendler on. That was a really good conversation. He was awesome.
Yeah, I'd love to hear that. I'll have to look that one up. I feel bad because there's obviously some female people that I think are really, really good, and they're all escaping me right now. This is a unique sort of drive, you know, in my world is shoot, fight, you know, grapple, work out. And this really is the thread. If you can't do this stuff, then you're never going to be ready to go back and do any of that other stuff.
Yeah.
But again, like we said, it's sort of like faith and religion. You kind of don't want to be told, but you can't wait your whole life to figure it out because your life will be over. You gotta get the resources out. And
yeah. Well, like you said, you just got to try it. Yeah. Just be open-minded. And, you know, there's some people, I mean, there's people that are phenomenal triathletes. Yeah. Why are they going to do CrossFit if that's their true love? And then obviously find out what you need to supplement because you're going to have imbalances too.
Yeah.
But if you love stand-up paddleboarding, don't worry about CrossFit. Just take some things from them to make you a better stand-up paddleboarder.
That's what's interesting. I don't know if you remember when they tried to really push that with CrossFit, paddleboarding and stand-up. Mm-hmm.
Remember it was in the games.
Was like, okay, and marathoners, and there's, you know, because in the old days, it was like, well, if you're doing that, you're trying to be an athlete. You're, you know, triathlete. And now it's, you know the real staple. you know, just what the value of it is. You got Henshaw and those guys, and you can't turn your back on it if it works. But yeah.
Absolutely. All right. So the last one before we talk about where people can find you, what do you do to decompress?
So I like photography. I walk my dog Jackson pretty regular. I really, really try every 3 months or so to get off the grid, you know, leave my phone home, which I know is just crazy, but go somewhere for 1 or 2 days where there's maybe one restaurant and nothing. So I'm either going to sleep all day and then pack up and come back home, or I'm just going to walk around, be bored, and come back and sleep all day and pack up and go home. And reading. I just, I got this, you know, 3 library cards. It's in, alternate between books and audiobooks and videos and just, if I can help somebody, it kind of actually makes me feel pretty good. It's sort of a recharge. So, yeah, that's about what I do. Yeah.
Brilliant.
And cook.
Yeah.
Try to cook. So.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing is, you know, when we're in the job, we want to help people. You know, that's why I love this, because I know there's good people that I'm trying to help, you know, whether they're military or first responders or, you know, in the prisons or whatever it is, you know, ER, you wake up hoping to make a difference in someone's life. For the people that retire or get hurt or whatever, there's that missing piece. And I find that's a big thing with people in that situation, is when they find themselves in a position to be able to give back again, because that's who they are.
Right.
That's very healing for them too.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. Helps me. You know, that was my mom's thing, and you know, and you kind of follow your parents every now and then. So,
mm-hmm. Absolutely. All right. So, very last question, so I can let you go. If people want to reach out to you, are you on social media or?
So, TJ at CrossFit.com. That's my email address. On Instagram, I have a Shield or Strength for the Shield site. CrossFit East on Facebook, and website CrossFit East. CrossFit Southside, I'm still there, but I just manage it now. We actually took the site down because we wanted it to be more informational. It started feeling like it was, you know, join now, 42-day plan, and I don't know what happened, but. Just, I got too busy to monitor it, and they took it somewhere they shouldn't have. So,
right.
So the others are good.
Yeah. Brilliant.
So,
all right. Well, I just want to say thank you.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you for letting me watch the program. It's great to see a facility that's doing it, you know, walking the walk. And I mean, obviously you understand it being in this for so long, but I know that those men and women that I saw today, where their bar is so much higher as they're, you know, they're zero, the ground zero, than people that weren't put through that. So when they go out on the streets as law enforcement officers, they're already so much further ahead in every element of their job.
That's what we want. As much as we say, you know, go muscles, not show muscles, if you're going to have on a uniform, it might be important to have the community think you can do the job.